The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, Dortmund's Tuchel torture, Messi, my booze hell, the man saving Sevilla, and Liao goes wow and deer's nuts as Milan do Napoli. It's all coming up in this Totally Football Show.
1-2-1 und ja!
Non è possibile!
Incroyable! Incroyable!
Tuesday the 4th of April, as the Euro crew reunites. That's Raphael Honigstein. All right, Rafa.
Hello.
Alvaro Romeo's with us as well. All right, Alvaro. James Horncastle's here too. Hello.
Hello, James.
And later on we'll be hearing from Julien Laurens, who's out in the field, probably quite literally, as we speak. But he has sent us a moment of the weekend. We'll hear that very, very shortly. Rafa, there was a perplexed look on your face.
That's just my general demeanor these days.
Default Honigstein.
But Tuchel torture, please explain that to me.
It was a... No, I mean, is it... Yeah, a tickle torture, maybe?
Okay. I thought you might have gone with Bayern blow up Dortmund with a bit of help of TNT.
I know, but I probably should have explained.
TNT, James. C4. Dynamite.
Right. Who's the TNT in
Thomas
this?
Tuchel.
Is his middle name N something?
It's two T's.
Yeah, TNT. But that's TT. The, Nobody calls you R and H.
Don't deconstruct my puns here.
TT. Yeah. All right. Let's have a moment of the weekend, eh, Raph?
Okay.
Yeah. One of your strong suits.
James. James, I'm sorry to tell you, I don't have a moment of the week.
No way.
But I have a moment of the season.
All right.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because Gregor Kobel, trying to clear a long ball from Dayo Upamecano, mishit spectacularly. And the ball trickles into Dortmund's net, almost in slow motion, to give Bayern the lead, to give Bayern the win, and to give Bayern the momentum in the championship race.
Upamecano, Bayern München versucht aufzubauen. Der BVB steht da hinten stark mit seiner Viererkette, die man jetzt sieht. Und ein Riesenfehler von Gregor Kobel. Und der Ball rollt ins Tor zum 1-0 für Bayern München.
Initially, I thought I'd never seen something like that. But then I realized I have seen something like that quite often. When we used to play football at BT.
Uh-huh.
And James tried to hit a few
Gregor
balls.
Gregor Kobel. That's harsh.
On
but
me,
yeah.
Yeah.
An air kick which sparked a rout, essentially. Bayern, 10 minutes later, with 3-0 up. We'll talk about that game, of course, very, very shortly. Alvaro, what was your moment of the weekend?
Has to be Correa. Correa scoring the winning goal for Atlético de Madrid.
Se va Correa, se va Correa. No le pueden parar. Correa, qué golazo.
Street style player in a way, but important for Atletico de Madrid in these 7 or 6 years that he's been there. It was pretty much the end of the game, 0-0 for Atletico and Betis, until Correa decided to go for a couple of balls that it looked like they had no owner. He clashed with a couple of players, he got them, and then after doing a couple of feints, he put the ball in the net, and it was the apotheosical moment of the weekend for Atletico de Madrid, because with this win, they are already quite far away from Real Sociedad, Betis and Villarreal, the chasers in the Champions League qualification race.
Huge, huge game. I thought maybe you'd have gone for Spain's game against Scotland for your moment of the...
And the thing is that, number one, it's so annoying to see Rodri. I'm sorry, Rodri saying that Spain didn't deserve to lose it or something like that. And I got many calls from different radios asking me, what did Rodri say? And it's true, I have to, not to justify Rodri, but in a way, defend Spain, but it was unjustifiable. Because I think that Scotland, number one, they had more energy, more passion. They were better in the boxes. And number two, they unmask a little bit Spanish football. Because with Luis Enrique, Spain didn't have very good players, but they had a style. And the style was the way of protecting ourselves from not having very good players. With Luis de la Fuente, we are devoid of a style, and then our players have to step up. Who can step up? Joselu, 33 years old, and some other strikers who are over 30, that they are not making a big difference in Spanish football. Let's see how it goes. But I'm a little bit worried ahead of the Nations League, because Spain is going to play the likes of Italy, for example.
Yeah, they're dangerous.
Well, they are the European champions. I think that.
All right. Yeah.
Okay, fine. Then maybe they are not the more dangerous side, but Scotland also, is definitely not the kind of rival
they were
that should inflict pain to Spain.
They were beaten in the Copa America finals as well, Italy, weren't they? Some of them.
Yes. Well, yeah, they probably lost the finalissimo against Argentina and thought, can we take some of their players? If you can't beat them, join them.
I think the lesson from what Alvaro is saying is that you have to have passion in the box. Otherwise, it just doesn't work.
I hear you, Rafa. That one doesn't need any explaining. James, let's get your moment of the weekend.
My moments of the weekend recently have all been about what happens in the tunnel or the locker room. Remember after the Derby della Capitale, at the Stadio Diego Armando Maradona on Sunday night, we saw at halftime Paolo Maldini getting into it with Luciano Spalletti. And Spalletti was complaining to the referee about, I think, a booking. And Maldini just came up to him and said, what are you on about, Luciano? You've already won the league. You know, just quit it. And Spalletti, being quite a prickly character, won't quit it. And so, yeah, it was quite interesting to see them two get at it.
Yeah.
And, well, Spalletti probably rightly to be quite annoyed and not be in the best mood considering the performance of his team.
Well, indeed. We'll get into the events of Sunday night, Napoli-Milan, later on. But now, here's Julien Laurens' moment of the weekend.
It's a sad one, James, because it's Lionel Messi being kind of booed a little bit, not too badly, certainly not as bad as last season after the Real Madrid defeat. Mm. But still, some boos and a few whistling when his name was mentioned by the speaker at the Parc des Princes. And to be fair, that was the announcement of what would come on that evening after the Parc des Princes, which was another terrible performance from Messi and from PSG.
Excellent. Where are we going to begin today's Continental Roundup? In the Bundesliga.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and begambleaware.org.
Raphael Honigstein. So since our last show, Bayern Munich fire Julian Nagelsmann, hire Thomas Tuchel, and of course, what's Tuchel's first game in charge? Is the Clásico against his old side, Dortmund, who are a point ahead of Bayern in the table? And you mentioned the dramatic moment from Kobel, that air kick which swung the fixture. Would it have gone another way, do you think, without that horrible error?
We don't know, but what we do know is that Dortmund started really well. They had a bit of swagger. You could see that they'd been unbeaten in 2023 in the league. They played with belief. They had character. They had presence. And Bayern, for some strange reasons, were nervous. Tuchel was nervous. He admitted being nervous after the game. Maybe some of that nervousness had spread onto the team. Of course, changes, only 48 hours to work with the side. Maybe they weren't still quite sure what he wanted them to do. It all added up to Dortmund having a lot of initiative. But then that goal changed everything. And Thomas Müller, who talks to everyone on the pitch, said that he spoke to some Dortmund players after the goal they conceded and felt that their heads had dropped.
Right.
It was a sense of here we go again, because they had lost every single game since 2014 in the Bundesliga in Munich. And the inevitable then became maybe a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Is there an element of lads, it's Dortmund when Bayern play them?
At home there is. At home there is, because they haven't lost for such a long time. The one game they lost in all these years, they lost 3-0 at home in 2014 with Pep in charge, but Bayern had already won the league at the time and didn't really care. So they have that psychological hold on them. That's definitely true. And Tuchel, in a way that he set up the team, also seemed to think, actually, it is only Dortmund, because he went away from that usual Bayern dominant style, pressing high, trying to control the game with the ball, having a lot of possession, to basically just sitting fairly deep and waiting for Dortmund to make mistakes. And then, as Marco Reus said, Bayern just played on the break at home quite shamelessly and destroyed them. So Tuchel would have seen those weaknesses, and Tuchel was quite happy to maybe give Dortmund a bit of initiative. Maybe they looked better than they really were in those early minutes, because it was partly by design. But certainly Bayern can almost count themselves a little bit unlucky, or perhaps should blame themselves for not winning in much more comfortable fashion, because after going 3-0 up, as you said earlier, 23 minutes, the game sort of just petered out and Bayern had lots of chances, 3 goals chalked off offside. It could have easily been 6 or 7. And Dortmund's 2 goals at the end just put a bit of cosmetics on the result.
And I remember that in 2021, the master lines of Thomas Tuchel when he took over Chelsea was getting clean sheets, one after another, and they won the Champions League like that. I wonder if he's, since he has taken over in the middle of the season, he's going to try to do something like that with Bayern too. You said that they played in the counter-attack more than having the possession of the ball. Do you think that following up in April, we'll be seeing a performance of Bayern like that? Thomas Tuchel defending deep?
Tuchel Nacho.
I'm not sure, because it's not in his nature, but he is very pragmatic in the sense that he understands what teams need, what the players are most comfortable in. I think the Bayern team is most comfortable in a back four, which was one of the changes of his very short regime. They were a little bit more passive, out of possession, defending a lot deeper. But I don't think that is the finished vision. I think this is just an intermediate step to a more fully formed Bayern, because Tuchel is deeply inspired by Guardiola and I think wants to ideally have free-flowing possession football with lots of dominance, lots of possession, but not at the price of asking too much of the team too quickly. So I think the defensive setup by his standards is just a step in a longer plan for Bayern, which will evolve as he becomes more comfortable with the team and vice versa.
Who was credited with the first goal? Who's kind of random?
It was an own goal, because Gregor Kobel got the...
Did he actually nick the ball?
Smallest of touches.
Okay.
That's why he was so reminiscent of James Horncastle, because he would never completely miss the ball.
Enough, Rafa. Enough.
Is there footage of that?
Thomas Müller.
I think it is online. Oh.
Thomas Müller, who's doing a lot of talking, you know, both literally and also with his feet and that, with a brace in this game, and moved to a more kind of traditional Müller position. Is using Müller the right way? Is that kind of job one for a successful incoming Bayern Munich manager?
To be fair to Julian Nagelsmann, I don't think he really played Müller in the wrong position. The problem was more that not playing Müller enough. Take him off when they were 1-0 up against Leverkusen and things disintegrated in his final game, as it happened for Bayern. Taking him off after only 10 minutes when Upamecano was sent off in that defeat at Borussia Mönchengladbach. These were the things that I think Nagelsmann got wrong, but he didn't, unlike Niko Kovac, for example, had this idea of playing Müller on the right or on the left, where he's not that impactful. So I think recognizing that Müller is one of those almost untouchables is something that Tuchel very quickly realized, because when you have a team in need of a bit of stability, clarity, I think the last thing you want to do is take off your most experienced guys and rely on some of the newer guys. And Tuchel, again, being very smart, understanding how to read a dressing room, understanding the needs of a team, of players, realized that this kind of back-to-basics approach, forward the back, and then it was quite fluid, sometimes 4-2-3-1, sometimes more as a 4-1-4-1, but there's not a huge difference, gave Bayern just a bit more comfort and that bit more familiarity that perhaps was missing under Nagelsmann.
Rafi, what would it say about Chelsea, given the thorough and exhaustive search that they are currently conducting for a new manager, were they to appoint the coach that Bayern have just sacked and replaced with the guy that Chelsea sacked at the beginning of the season?
I wouldn't be too cynical about this move if it was to happen, because Nagelsmann is a great manager and is a huge talent. His problem at Bayern was that I think he was still a little bit too young and inexperienced, both in some of the things he did, the way he behaved, the way things were a little bit self-centered at times, but also in a football sense, trying too hard, I think, to fit Bayern into his ideas, fit the players into his ideas, rather than being a bit more adaptive and looking for a way of bringing the best out of the players, and then kind of the system is almost the afterthought. That was one of the complaints. It's not a huge complaint. I think it's just the signs of a manager still understanding how things work at this level. And my suggestion would not be that he'd be a bad appointment for Chelsea. I'd say it'd be a bad choice on Julian Nagelsmann's behalf to go to Chelsea, because I think a few more managers will bite the bullet there in that dysfunctional surroundings. And I think he'd be better advised to go somewhere a bit more stable, like Real Madrid, for example.
Very nice. Bayern have Freiburg in the cup on Tuesday. That's this evening, Rafa. And then they're going to be facing Freiburg again next Saturday as Tuchel tries to follow up that brilliant debut on the Bayern bench.
Yeah, and it's a bit strange because they have these two games against Freiburg and then they have two games against Manchester City, not back-to-back, but still within the space of 8 days. And Tuchel will have to think very hard. And of course, Guardiola and him share a lot of history. They had all these famous meetings at Schumann's in the Bayern Munich, where they were talking tactics when Tuchel had a year off. And it'd be fascinating to see if Tuchel can do what he has done quite frequently against Guardiola. But that's next week. In the meantime, it'd be very interesting to see kind of clues of how he sees this Bayern team evolving. Who are the players he really trusts? Who are the players that perhaps he doesn't like? And that's why it'd be fascinating to see the next couple of Freiburg matches.
Yeah. Dortmund, meanwhile, who slipped to 2 points off the top of the table in the Bundesliga, have Union next Saturday. Union, who were the only other top six side to pick up all 3 points this weekend. They beat Stuttgart 3-0, provoking the decision to dismiss the Stuttgart manager, Bruno Labbadia. Before that, Dortmund also have cup action midweek, Rafa.
Yeah, they're playing Leipzig. Leipzig side, who are themselves in a bit of a mini crisis. They lost 3-0 at home to Mainz. They're on a terrible run.
Mm.
Everything looked absolutely rosy with Marco in charge, but things have become quite thorny.
Nice.
Rosa in charge, James. Yeah. And people are trying to figure out what is it about either Marco Rosa or this team that they haven't found the kind of consistency and quality that the squad would have you expect, because there is a lot of really good talent there, but they look completely disorganized against, admittedly, a very good Mainz side. Another up-and-coming manager there, Bo Svensson, he's, I think, one to keep an eye on. But yeah, big game for Dortmund, because the last thing they want is to, having seized the initiative to Bayern now in the championship, to say goodbye to perhaps the more realistic or most realistic avenue of winning silverware, which is the cup.
Mm.
So a bit of pressure on them, and people will be watching very closely for any signs of mental fragility or anything, because that's been, of course, the big story for this Dortmund team. They seem to have their act together for once since the restart.
Mm. I don't know if Julian Nagelsmann is going to be the manager of Real Madrid, number one. Historically, it's true that those managers who are rather low-key have worked better at Real Madrid, Zidane, Del Bosque, Ancelotti. I struggle to think if Real Madrid had any manager that didn't speak Spanish, because even John Benjamin Toshak, Jupp Heynckes, Capello, of course, he's Italian, at some degree, they spoke a little bit.
John Toshak.
They spoke a little bit of Spanish. Obviously, Nagelsmann would have to study the language and all that. That would be very good. But it's still uncertain whether Carlo Ancelotti will continue at Real Madrid or not. His contract expires in 2024. That's true. But we know that contracts are only a paper at Real Madrid. And they asked him about Brazil in the press conference ahead of the game against Valladolid, and Carlo Ancelotti admitted that Brazil had contacted him and that he was very flattered by the call. He wouldn't be too unhappy to coach Brazil. A year ago, he said that when he left Real Madrid, he was going to retire officially as a coach. But this is a new avenue, completely. Mm. I mean, the Brazil idea is not something that we should discard. It pleases a lot Carlo Ancelotti.
He also wheeled out the classic Italian phrase, if my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a bike. I think, wasn't it, about Vinicius sort of doing something? Brilliant.
Vinicius, by the way, who has endorsed Carlo Ancelotti to think about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very nice. Rafa, before we wrap it up for the Bundesliga, listeners, they're curious to know who's taking over from Bruno Labbadia at Stuttgart.
A very famous name, James.
Ooh.
A very famous second name, because it is Sebastian Hoeneß, nephew of Uli and son of Dieter Hoeneß of 1990 World Cup winner fame. Quite circular, this Bundesliga managerial thingy, because...
Right. Cousin of Graham. Sorry.
I don't get the reference.
Insular is a one way of saying. You know, I mean, you've gone for the...
Do you mean incestuous?
Nepotistical. No. Why is it circular then?
Circular because, James, Labbadia had taken over from Matarazzo.
Of course.
At Stuttgart.
Yep.
And Sebastian Hoeneß was fired at Hoffenheim.
Where your man is now, isn't he?
Where Matarazzo is now.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, it's all a circle, isn't it?
The circle of life.
The what a triangle.
The circle of...
Wasn't that the main message of True Detective?
Yeah, time is a flat circle. Yeah. That and...
And a few things. And a few other things.
One or two other things. First season. Really recommend that show. Really recommend that show.
Dark.
All right then. Hey, next up, let's talk City F.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. With Bet Builder from LiveScore Bet, you can combine markets from thousands of options to create your own bet on the biggest football fixtures in the Premier League, the Champions League, the EFL, and around the world. So if you think you can successfully pick the first goal scorer, the final score, the total number of corners, and whether there'll be a red card, then use Bet Builder from LiveScore Bet to make up to six selections and get a single bet with the combined odds. Or, if you can't make up your mind, you can choose from the pre-built quick bet options. Bet Builder from LiveScore Bet. Building a bet just got easier. Find out more at livescorebet.com or by downloading the LiveScore Bet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only. Full account terms apply. And of course, please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Sandro, vince il duello Sandro innesca Rafa Leao contro Rachmani, Rafa adesso, gol! Adesso! Rafa! Adesso!
City A, everybody. Sunday night, Napoli taking on Milan. 10 days before the two teams meet in an all-Italian Champions League quarter final. There they were facing off in Naples in Serie A. And the widespread expectation, James, was that Milan were going to get a pace thing. Sure enough, it finished 4-0. Only 4-0 to Milan. Wow.
Well, in Milan, they were confident, more confident than the press were, because they had been to Naples the last 2 years. They had won. They'd lost in September at San Siro, but they played really well in that game. They hit the bar twice, had a 1v1, should have done a lot better. And to be honest, if you look at Napoli's track record in big games, particularly since the beginning of 2023, they've lost to Inter, they've lost to Lazio, and now they've lost to Milan. So Napoli deserve our confidence when it comes to predicting what's going to happen in the Champions League, but there should be that doubt. I think a lot of people have just tossed to one side the other teams from Serie A in the Champions League, when in actual fact they shouldn't, because as we've mentioned on last week's show, Inter a good cup team. Right. And Milan are still the champions of Italy. They are departing champions, but they are a good team.
Right, and they rediscovered some of that championship verve, didn't they? They reverted to the kind of pre-World Cup formation.
Yeah, they went back to the 4-2-3-1 with which they won the league last year. And Leao in particular has gone from playing as a centre forward back to playing on the left wing, where he was the MVP of Serie A last year. And I think psychologically this was a really important game for Milan, because the players were talking afterwards of how they listened to the noise outside of the club, you know, how people like Richardson were writing them off. And I think for Leao as well, he wasn't too happy about people talking so much about Cavaratskhelia going into this game, saying that he's the best player in the league. And he wanted to make a statement. And boy, did he do that with those two goals. Brahim Diaz, even before he came off, was magnificent. playing on the right-hand side, which was one of the kind of tactical novelties of this game because he usually plays as a number 10, and Milan's right side has been a problem. And even when he went off injured, we saw Kvaratskhelia, as he's now being called, Alexis Salamakers, one of the kind of budget squad players that Milan have got, gone one of those mazy dribbles that Leao would have been proud of, Kvaratskhelia would have been proud of, Maradona would have been proud of. And now, quite predictably, one of the narratives is, has Milan shown too much of their hand ahead of this Champions League tie?
Mm. Well, it was their biggest win of the season. It was the first time that Napoli had lost a home game by that margin in 23 years almost. Tell us about the backdrop there at the Stadio Maradona.
I think this was a factor as well, because Spalletti had talked about the atmosphere in the city, where there are streamers everywhere, where there are Scudetti everywhere. There's already this anticipation that they've won the league, they've got it wrapped up. So that's a distraction. And then at the stadium itself, you had protests going on against the owner for ticket prices, protests going on against the authorities for stopping Napoli fans from travelling as well. And you had this very peculiar situation straight after kickoff where two ultra groups in the Curva B basically clashed physically and evacuated that part of the stand because they were upset with each other for how they were protesting against the ownership, which is really bizarre considering Napoli about to win the
Napoli Popular Front and the Napoli People's Popular Front.
Indeed. So you had this situation where for most of the game, it was played in silence. And you could hear the Milan fans and their chants, you know, Interista Vaffanculo and all that sort of stuff. Sorry, James. So I don't think that really helped or contributed. And it takes us back to the start of the season when Napoli were in their pre-season training camp in the Dolomites and fans were heckling Spalletti. And they said, wake up, because look, the ownership have sold all of these players. Koulibaly's gone. They haven't extended the contract of Mertens or Insigne. Our season's going to be rubbish. And instead, their season has been better than anybody expected. They will win the league for the first time since 1990. But these divisions within the fan base about the ownership refuse to go away.
Mm. All right. It's going to be interesting to see. Alvaro, sorry.
Yeah, what are the chances of Napoli blowing away something?
16 points.
Yeah, and in the Champions League as well, they are playing AC Milan.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people outside of Naples or even Italy forget that Napoli, this is the first time they've ever been in a Champions League quarterfinal. And as good as they have been in the league and in Europe as well this year, because let's not forget the performances against Liverpool, the 6-1 in Amsterdam against Ajax, how comfortable they were against Eintracht Frankfurt. This is new territory for them. And I don't know, watching Real Madrid last year, Alvaro, particularly when they came back and beat Man City at the Bernabeu, I do believe in cultural heritage. I do believe that Milan playing the first leg at San Siro, even though Napoli on paper are a better team than Milan, the atmosphere, the environment will have some sort of impact on the game that we can't see at the moment, even though I think Milan won't be able to repeat what they did, in at least in terms of scoreline against Napoli in the Champions League, famous last words. But I do think that matters. So I don't expect Napoli to win the Champions League. I'm not as confident as other people are that they will reach the final of the Champions League. They will win the league. I think it could get quite nervy over this period where all of a sudden April looks very congested, less congested for them than it does for example, Inter, also in the Coppa Italia semi-finals. But what happens, for example, if Osimhen, his injury is worse than feared and he has a relapse? Because I think the other thing to consider here, and one of the reasons why Napoli's season has been so good, is but for a few weeks in October, Osimhen has been fit for the entire season.
Mm. Which and he was missing in this game with Milan.
Yeah. But Osimhen, for his first two seasons in Italy, he spent a lot of time on the sidelines. He's been perceived to be quite a brittle player. And so if that injury is worse than expected and they tried to play it down, then, yeah, I think April could be quite nervy. Maybe they don't break or match the record that we were talking about on Sunday's BT show, which is winning the league with six games to spare like the Grande Torino did in the late 40s. maybe it does go into May. But I think at the end of the day, they will definitely win the league.
Okay. Next Saturday, James, on BT Sport, we've got a double header. We'll be doing Torino-Roma and then Lazio-Juve, which is interesting because at least two, possibly three of the sides who are battling with Milan and Inter and Atalanta as well for those Champions League spots. Lazio at the moment are 4 points clear in second place, 16 points behind Napoli. And then you've got Milan and Inter level on points with Roma just behind them and Atalanta, Juve hovering as well. What about Fiorentina, though, who beat Inter this weekend, notching up their eighth straight victory? What's going on there?
Well, they were better than they've shown in the league. They've been quite unlucky, if you look at expected goals, all that nonsense, James. And also, they have been struggling to find a striker to replace Dusan Vlahovic. They've been creating a lot of chances. Replacing Vlahovic in the short term last year wasn't an issue. They had Christoph Piontek. They got goals from everybody else on the team. At the beginning of this season, the likes of Luka Jovic, who they signed from Real Madrid, and Artur Cabral, who's been there for a year now, weren't scoring. Certainly, over the spring, they have started scoring again. They weren't available in this game. It didn't matter. And they're just a really awkward side to play against, Fiorentina, because they play high up the pitch. I think they play higher than any other team in the league. They press better than any team in the league. I think the three best pressing teams in Serie A, Torino, Milan, and Fiorentina. And it's no surprise that often those teams upset the big sides, the other big sides. And yeah, they're on this great run. They have a really good chance of winning the Conference League and emulating what Roma did last year. And while it seems a bridge too far for them to get into Europe via Serie A, because the top six are so far ahead of everybody else, they can qualify for the Europa League by winning the Conference League like Roma did last year. You mentioned what about Fiorentina? We should say what about Lazio as well?
Yeah,
because Lazio just don't get talked about because of their noisy neighbours and Jose Mourinho. Even this weekend, for example, one of the most memeable moments in Serie A was Mourinho talking to Ola Solbakken on the sidelines, the signing that they made in December, and instructing him on the set-piece permutations. And then Roma go and score, and he basically tells Solbakken to put his tracksuit back on and sit back down. And that has got more attention than the fact that Lazio are clear in second, at least until Juventus perhaps get this points penalty overturned. Lazio have kept, 16, 17 clean sheets this season? Ciro Immobile, the most prolific goal scorer in the league for the last 10 years, has been out injured for most of the season. Milinkovic-Savic.
It's almost like that's why they're doing so well.
James, come on. And Milinkovic-Savic, who has been arguably the best midfield player in the league since Pogba was Pogba the first time around, has not had a very good season, although he scored a great free kick at the weekend. Mm. So Sarri and Lazio deserve more credit, deserve more attention. I suppose one of the reasons why they haven't is occasionally their fans do things like they did in the Derby della Capitale, which, you know, anti-Semitic chants and someone going to a Lazio game with Hitlerson on the back of their shirt. Not very good. So it's difficult to kind of have your heart warmed by Lazio, but at least with the players and what the coach is doing, a really, really impressive season.
All right. And an interesting game coming up for him in particular, Sunday evening, live on BT Sport.
Saturday evening, James.
Saturday evening, live on BT Sport, as he takes on his former side, Juventus Alvaro.
And Pedro. Turning 36 this year, if he hasn't already.
Yeah, Pedro, who keeps delivering
but
in...
But young in Serie A years, I think.
He is.
A full he can get 6 years younger than Zlatan.
In his 40s? No.
But he keeps delivering in big games and is part of this Lazio front three, which has very few reference points, no reference points because there isn't a striker there. And he is just such a clever player who Sarri wanted after working with him at Chelsea and took the opportunity to take him on a free transfer from Roma. So it's really quite interesting that Pedro is one of, I think, three players to have scored in the Derby della Capitale for Roma and Lazio. Not very many players go across from one side to the other, unlike, for example, with the two Milan sides or whatever. So it's, pretty good.
All right. Juve, whether or not they get that points penalty back and whatever happens with the various other things that are pending in a judicial sense for Juventus, they would be, or they could be, within 3 points of the top four with a win on Saturday evening, which is just extraordinary. Anyway, Alvaro, we're going to do La Liga very, very shortly. But next up, let's touch on Ligue 1, where Paris Saint-Germain were facing Lyon. A lot of people were expecting an upset, but Lyon won.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Oh, Cherki Diomandé qui est venu lui piquer le ballon. C'était plutôt Nkoumbédi qui était venu lui piquer le ballon. Avec Barcola! Et le but! Pour l'Olympique Lyonnais!
The time at last to hear from Julien Laurent. In Ligue 1 this weekend, many stories. But once again, PSG dominating the headlines once again with a terrible performance, losing at home to Lyon 1-0 to a side that hadn't won in their last three matches. Jules, what happened this time?
Well, they were terrible, James, from pretty much start to finish, although they started the game actually decently and Vitinha had a big chance early on. But very quickly, you could see the players were just not in it, really. They were not up for it. There was not enough movement, and then the same issues kept coming back again in that game. The lack of collective unity, the poor defending, the lack of, I think, just patterns of play. But it's not even just that. It's just that they could actually not create anything. When you've got Messi, Mbappé, Nuno Mendes, Hakimi in your team, and you actually don't create much at the end of the game, it's really worrying. And that's exactly what PSG did. Lyon deserved their win. They missed a penalty, like I said, hit the post. Mm. And then the rebound was blasted over the bar by Cherki. They could have had 2, 3, 4 goals maybe, because it was so easy for them to counter, so easy for them to project themselves forward, the quick transitions forward. It was just terrible. I think the Marseille guy, again, picked the wrong tactic, which is not a surprise. I mean, he looked... To be fair, he looks more and more like drained by this whole experience. And Chelsea sacked the manager that they appointed pretty much at the start of the season. PSG still have the same one. I don't know why. I don't know why he's still there. But again, he got it wrong. But he was not the only one. The players didn't turn up. Mbappé was poor. Messi was poor. Verratti was shocking again and apparently got injured and left the field after an hour. So it was just terrible from everybody.
Okay. How big a win was this for Lyon down in ninth place?
It is, because not so much for the league, because I think they know that they're not going to finish top four, top five, maybe not even top six, although the sixth place now doesn't give you anything this season. So the only hope they have really for this season is the French Cup. And they are in the semi-final. They will play at Nantes in midweek. And the best way to prepare for that semi-final of the Coupe de France was to win and to play the way they did against PSG. It won't be the same kind of game against Nantes, because Nantes won, have a lot of the ball and won't go forward like PSG did and won't expose themselves to counter-attacks. But still, for the morale and for the confidence of these Lyon players, it was great for them. And okay, like I said, missed a penalty, but they were still very good going forward. Bradley Barcola, who's another kid from the academy, who's only 20 and 20 days or something like that, who scored the winning goal in Paris for Lyon, looks a really, really good talent and with a lot of potential. So yeah, it was perfect for them, not for the league, because I think their hopes are all gone, but certainly to prepare well for the French Cup.
Okay. They have that semi-final. PSG don't. They're out of the French Cup. They're also out of the Champions League. All they have is the Ligue 1 title race, which they are still 6 points clear of. But the figures are quite extraordinary. That's 3 defeats now in their last 4. They've lost 6 of their last 10. When was the last time PSG had a run like that?
Never, I think, James. That's the answer. They've lost 8 games already in 2023. They lost none in the first half of the season. So it's not, like I said, it's not just on the manager, because clearly some things were working before and they're not working at all now, even if I blame him for most of it. But it's true that we've never seen anything like that in Paris, certainly since the Qatari took over. Before that, when PSG were not very good, at the times where they were not very good, they would lose 3-4, 6-10. That happened before. But since the Qatari took over, since they've been dominating French football, we've never seen them on such a bad run. And the thing is, sometimes you can lose, and we said almost every time they lose, you can lose but still play well. You can lose and just, it was just not your night. Again, like they did like against Rennes last week, the week before the international break, they deserve to lose. On Sunday night, they deserve to lose again against Lyon. So the problem is far deeper than just, it was a bad result, but the performance was actually quite good. No, the results and the performances are really bad at the moment.
It sounds a little bit like the team have kind of given up on the whole Gauthier project, much as you have, Jules. Before we get on to maybe that, why was Messi booed before the game had even started?
I don't know, James. We mentioned it in our moment of the week. I think there's a bit of frustration, of course, from the fans, because they're not happy with the situation, and 6 points is still quite a big gap. But it's only because Marseille are losing quite a lot of points on the way. Lens have lost quite a lot of points on the way. Monaco the same behind. That's why the lead is 6 points. To be fair, I'm not really sure PSG deserve to be so clear at the top from the others. I don't think they've been the best team in the league this season at all. I think Marseille and Lens have been better than them over the length of the season so far. But I think there's frustration. The fact that he was so good at the World Cup and then he's been so anonymous since the World Cup played a part. Also, the uncertainty over his future. But I think the fans not really happy, certainly the ones who want him to stay, that it looked like he was going to stay, that he wanted to stay. And now it seems that he's not so sure about staying, that he's telling Barcelona that he wants to go back, that he's telling Inter Miami and MLS that he wants to come over, that the Saudis think that they have a chance of signing him. And I don't think all of that helps the relationship, which was already a bit up and down with the PSG fans since he arrived, to be fair. So yeah, that's the only reason really I can find one. But he gave the ball away 26 times in the game on Sunday.
Messi did, on his own?
Yeah, on his own. James, again, we're not talking about you and me playing at that kind of... This is the greatest player of all time, who gives the ball away 26 times against a team ninth in the table that hasn't won for 3 games. I just can't work my head around how someone like him can be so bad and lose so many balls in a game of... This is not even a good... It's not a quality game. It's not a Champions League final, semi-final. You don't play against Man City or Real Madrid. It's Lyon, who have been very average this season. And yeah, he gives the ball away so much. So that's why I think he'd been booed even before the game started. And his performance would not have helped his case with the fans.
Absolutely. It does sound a lot like the team are doing their best to get the manager fired, and they must be bewildered about why they can give the ball away 26 times, they can lose back-to-back home games without even scoring, and the club still persists with Christophe Gauthier.
Yeah, I'm as amazed as a lot of people. Before the game, they were telling me that he would finish the season, that they don't know yet if he will be there next season. I can tell you he won't be there next season. It's impossible, not with what we're seeing now. The only reason why maybe he's finishing the season is because they think he's a bit like what we saw as Spurs, for example, what I mean by that is that they think that you can still somehow see out the season. And if you change now and you bring either an interim coach or a number one that could, I don't know, change something. I really don't know why the Marseille guy is still there. It baffles me, but he's still there for now, certainly. Because I think that Thiago Motta is showing in Bologna, and you know well, James, that he could do a very, very good job, I think, in Paris. Luis Enrique is a great candidate, so is Zinedine Zidane. Julian Nagelsmann, if he doesn't go to Chelsea, is a great candidate too. It's not like if there was nobody on the market, really. So I don't understand it.
Okay, well, they have a six-point lead, as you mentioned, over Lens and Marseille. And their next home game is in a fortnight against Lens. Is that six-point margin enough, Julien Laurens?
I don't think so, James. Right now, it's not. They're not good. PSG are not good. This is not a good team. They don't play as a team. Their individual talent don't shine at the moment. They're not shining yet. They've shown well in Marseille, for example. They managed to beat Lille just about at the last second in a home match a few weeks ago too. But overall, collectively, you're not good. Individually, you're not good. And you're in a negative spiral. So no, I don't think 6 points is enough. If they don't wake up, then they're not going to win this title, and Lens or Marseille will. And even Monaco, to be fair, are only 3 points behind them now. So they in with a little shout. So it's going to be a great end of the season. But the PSG need to, something has to happen there. Otherwise, they won't win that title, which would be embarrassing.
Okay, we should give a little bit of love to Monaco, who got their second straight victory with a spectacular match against Racing Strasbourg.
Yes, incredible. They won 4-3. They were in control and then somehow conceded two quick goals. And then in the second half, they were much better. They were the Monaco team at their best this season that we've seen sometimes. The problem is the consistency. We've always said it. But when they play well, like they did in the second half, is great. And it's even better for them to see two of the youngsters, Ben Seguir, who we've mentioned before on the show, but Edan Diop as well, who is only 18 and scored his first Ligue 1 goal in his career. Amazing performance from him, achievement from him. We saw him together against Bayer Leverkusen in the Europa League, where he came on and did really well. But that was a very special moment for him and for all the Diop family, of course, who are doing well at the moment. So it's great for Monaco, and it's a shame for them. They drop a few points in games they should not have before. Otherwise, they will be in the title race.
Mm. All right, then. Big weekend coming up as PSG visit Nice next time around. That's on Saturday. And Jules, maybe we'll have better news from the Parisians next time around. For now, though, thank you very much indeed.
Perfect. Thank you, guys.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
If you fancy a bit of cup action midweek, James, we didn't mention the Coppa Italia semi-finals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a big game tonight, if you're getting this podcast on Tuesday. Which is the Derby d'Italia.
Nice.
Between Juventus and Inter.
They've only just met in the league, haven't they?
They have, and Juventus came out on top in that game. And it's critical for Simone Inzaghi, who, as we saw in that Gazzetta front page, is in bilico. He's
3 games to save his job. That doesn't feel like in bilico to me. That feels like a normal state of affairs. But
no, I think they just keep adding games on
until
the end of the season, which is when I expect they'll make a decision. But I think it is big for Inzaghi, this game and the Benfica game, because he has this reputation for being a cup manager. And if all of a sudden you start going out of the cup competitions and your performances in the league are what they are, which is 10 defeats in 28 games, a club in a financially difficult position, now jeopardised with going out or not being in the Champions League next year, the Coppa Italia does become quite important. Mm. So let's see what happens.
Okay, Fiorentina taking on Cremonese in the other semi-final. Alvaro, La Liga also got cup semi-finals. Coppa del Rey, Your friends at Athletic Club de Bilbao will be hosting Osasuna. Athletic, a goal down from the first leg. And the other game, is that of much consequence?
No, it's just an irrelevant one.
Right.
It has never been played.
Okay. Barcelona-Real Madrid in the other semi-final. It's Real Madrid who are a goal down after the first meeting in the Copa del Rey semi-finals there. Both of those two teams warmed up with big wins at the weekend. Barcelona were 4-0 winners at Elche. Real Madrid, what did they get against Valladolid?
It was a set 2-0 for them. They beat Valladolid 6-0.
6-0.
Yeah.
Yeah. Karim Benzema with a first-half hat-trick. He scored all three goals inside 6.5 minutes.
Yeah, that was incredible. It was not only his first hat-trick in the first half of the game in La Liga, but also, you know, he did it in 7 minutes. And the quality of his goals went in crescendo spectacularly. The first goal was all right. The second one was a very good solo run with a great finish. He put it in the top corner. And the third one, I wouldn't know how to define that. It was like a bicycle kick without actually lifting one of your legs before hitting it with the other. But he put the ball in a very casual, nice way in the net. And it was very important for Benzema, I believe, because this season he has scored many goals, I would say, almost as many as Lewandowski in La Liga, but his game hasn't been up to standards. He hasn't been physically fully fit. And also, I think that some other players, they have taken some protagonism, I don't know if you would say that in English, from him, the likes of course.
Taking the spotlight.
Yeah, the spotlight. They have taken the spotlight out of him a little bit. So it was very important for Benzema to score a hat-trick. Let's don't forget that in La Liga this season we haven't had many hat-tricks. In the Premier League, Erling Haaland and some others, but mainly Erling Haaland, has scored many. But we had to wait until the La Liga's second half to see the first hat-trick in La Liga, scored by Ollán Sanzet, a player from Athletic Club Bilbao. I'll talk about him later. And Karim Benzema scored his hat-trick, and it was, as I said, a good win for Real Madrid, because, you know, players like Rodrigo, like Asensio, step up a little bit, and they are going to be very important in this run of games for Real Madrid.
Okay, Wednesday night they take on Barcelona, who is, we mentioned, 4-0 winners the weekend. Lewandowski, he didn't get a hat-trick, but he did get two goals and an assist, and Barcelona got yet another clean sheet. That's 20 now this season.
20 clean sheets for Barcelona, and you know, I always like to compare leagues and point tallies and all that, because I think that that is...
Which league is best, do you think?
Well, I think that this season in particular, I would say that in terms of entertainment, Bundesliga has been second to none for a few years.
Really?
That's my opinion, seriously, but anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that La Liga has been not that competitive this year, as you know. There has never been such a distance between the first spot and the 20th spot by this point in the history of the competition. So that tells you a little bit what the story is like. And Barcelona is many points away from Real Madrid, 12 already. And the truth is that now they've got, from the big five leagues, the best point ratio.
Yeah, after Napoli.
After Napoli's defeat. It's incredible because you would say that this season Napoli has been the refreshing news in European football, altogether with Benfica, in my opinion, but especially Napoli. You wouldn't have said that about Barcelona. No. Barcelona is playing in La Liga, and they've got the best point ratio. Better one than Bayern, better one than Arsenal, Napoli, and PSG. So it is pretty impressive. I don't think that this Barcelona is a great team yet, but they have all the makings to dominate La Liga this season because they don't lose the plot.
Right.
They are always very focused.
Okay.
They've got...
referees?
We'll talk about that later. They've got an influential goalkeeper,
right.
An influential centre-back who is a titan. I spoke about him. Araujo, who can do many things on his own. And then up front, they've got the top scorer of La Liga, Robert Lewandowski. So I think that all these three players, they have been a little bit the backbone of Barcelona, with fringe players stepping up whenever needed, Christensen, Rafinha, Gavi. And that, all together with Real Madrid's lack of focus on time has created this situation in which Barcelona is not running away with the title yet, but they are 12 points away from winning La Liga with 10 games to go, with 11 games to go.
So those levers have really worked.
They have.
You know, I mean, because that's the story about Barcelona. They have spent a hell of a lot of money to put this team together, and it is starting to pay off.
And I think that the signings were good. Christensen... coming for free, it was a very astute signing. Good recruitment by Matteo Alemany, because Matteo Alemany, this was last summer was his second window just to prove his worth. He was the mastermind of that Valencia that won the Spanish Cup in 2019, and he's creating a good Barcelona. Rafinha, for all his deficiencies and his lack of accuracy at the beginning of the season, has been very important in Dembele's absence. Then they brought Koundé, the best defender in La Liga out of the big three, Atletico, Barcelona and Real Madrid, and he had an instant impact. And I think the levers, yes, they were well triggered.
Very nice.
They'll be paying for them until 2080 or something.
Right. Someone's going to be facing either Real Madrid or Barcelona in the final. It could be Bilbao, Athletic Club de, yeah, or Osasuna.
Yes.
CFA.
look, it's a Basque derby, even though if you check the Spanish map,
yeah,
and the distribution of Spanish regions, Pamplona is not Basque country on paper, but it was in Pamplona.
Is it Navarro?
Yeah, it was in Navarra.
Is this like, is Middlesbrough in Yorkshire kind of debate?
You know, I'm not that familiar with that, but I guess, okay, yes. No. If you mention that, I guess yes, yes, yeah, because I think that your cultural level is high.
Thank you.
Yeah. but, you know, Basque language is spoken a lot in the north of Navarra. If I go to the north of Navarra, I feel in the Basque country, the Basque culture is really strong in there. Mm. And Athletic Club Bilbao's attacking force in terms of creation and in terms of scoring is all Navarran. I'm talking about Muniain, I'm talking about Sancet, I'm talking about Raúl García, I'm talking about Berenguer, Iñaki Williams, Nico Williams, all born or bred in Pamplona, but they play for Athletic Club Bilbao. So it's a game in which Athletic Club Bilbao will have to do a small remontada. We don't have many good strikers to do that. It was very visible.
Is that because they're all from Navarra?
It was very visible against Getafe the other day, 0-0, we couldn't score a single goal. We have been scoreless in 7 games in La Liga, we have to step up right now. Tickets have been sold out ahead of this game on Tuesday evening, and I'm expecting a really good atmosphere at San Mamés. And I would like to talk about Ollán Sancet very quickly, because Athletic Club Bilbao has a new director of communication, and he did something a little bit unprecedented in Bilbao, and I think that in La Liga. Ollán Sancet, probably our best youngest player altogether with Nico Williams, announced that he's extending his contract. After the game, he got a microphone and he talked to the whole crowd and he said that he extended his contract until 2032.
Good Lord.
Wow. It's only like a Chelsea contract.
It is a total Chelsea contract. Yeah, this happened in the past with Athletic. We gave like a lifetime extension to Julen Guerrero, one of our best players in the 90s. And Ollán Sancet is now the player with the longest contract.
Athletic for life.
Athletic for life.
Very nice. We should mention the changes at Sevilla since our last show.
Yeah.
Man United's next opponent, of course, in the Europa League in a week's time, who fired their manager. Who did they bring in?
Mendilibar, the former manager
of Eibar. Right. Mendilibar.
Good lever, yeah. Good manager, I would say. Good manager, and he...
He masterminded a big success this weekend, their first away victory in almost 6 months, actually. This was at Cádiz, again, a derby.
Yeah.
An Andalusian, all Andalusian affair.
Definitely, all Andalusian derby. Nobody will challenge this, because some people would challenge what I said about Osasuna and Athletic Club Bilbao in Spain.
I don't care about those people.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But Mendilibar is a practical manager. He created an Eibar side that stayed in La Liga for a few years against all the odds. His pressing up front is very good. Mendilibar always creates aggressive sides. And this Sevilla won with two players who are stepping up. Number one, En-Nesyri. After the World Cup, only Benzema has scored more goals in Spanish football. Mm. And En-Nesyri, after the World Cup, is doing it. I think he got a proper confidence booster in the World Cup with Morocco reaching the semifinals of the competition. And Lucas Ocampos. There was never a worse fit for Ajax than Lucas Ocampos in the first half of the season. But there cannot be a better fit for Lucas Ocampos than Sevilla. He is a player whose enthusiasm is contagious. He is a player that sometimes is a little bit dispersed because his enthusiasm tries to cover too much ground on the pitch. But with this Sevilla, which is a little bit rigid and a little bit too veteran, having a player like Lucas Ocampos is a blessing for them.
There you go. This change from Jorge Sampaoli to Mendilibar.
Yeah.
Who's more of an old school boss, yeah? How do you think that affects the upcoming clash with Manchester United?
It does. It does. I really think so, because with Sampaoli, I couldn't have given Sevilla a chance. Now with Mendilibar, even though this
Europa Libre.
Europa Libre. It will be different, that's for sure. I think that he will prepare this game very, very thoroughly, even though his European experience is not there. Mm. I mean, this is the first experience of Mendilibar in a top side, apart from his short spell at Athletic Club Bilbao in 2005. I don't think that Mendilibar has been a coach in Europe, but he's got his chance then, right now, and I don't have any reason to believe that Mendilibar is going to create a worse Sevilla than it was with Sampaoli. I think that, if anything, Mendilibar is going to improve that group of players.
Mm. Excellent. Alvaro, just before we leave things, Jules mentioned when he was talking about the boos that greeted Messi's name ahead of their clash with Lyon last weekend, and the fact that there is this ongoing story about him returning to Barcelona. Is that a real prospect, do you think?
It's very difficult because, number one, Barcelona has to reduce their salary, the wage bill in 200 million. They haven't been able to register Gavi as a first team player because La Liga hasn't accepted that. So if you cannot put in the same sentence something like, but Messi is returning, but we cannot register Gavi as a first team squad player. I mean, over there is an oxymoron, there is a contradiction. So I think that this conversation is a little bit of a smoke curtain, really, because Barcelona has many more things to care about. For example, and a very important one that I want to mention before my section is over, is the fact that Zeferin has said that what he hears about Enrique Negreira, is a very serious thing.
Negreira was the referee's vice president who received the millions in payment.
Seven million by Barcelona. And those offences or crimes, they are time-barred according to La Liga's regulation, but they are not time-barred according to UEFA regulations.
Ooh.
And UEFA could actually trigger a couple of clauses, the Articles 402 and the 403.
I'm familiar with those, yeah.
We are very familiar with them, but our listeners are not, so I'm going to explain why.
Okay. Yep.
They are important. By those articles, a club can get a year suspension for trying to have an influence in a game's result.
Right.
So, let's see what happens there. But this is the first time that Zeferin speaks publicly about all this, and it doesn't look good for Barcelona.
Indeed not. All right, well, Easter weekend is on its way with exciting games all over the continent, and next Tuesday we'll be back to review what happens in them. For now, though, it's many, many thanks to Julian a short time ago, Rafa there, Alvaro, James, and you, listener, and producer Charlie as well, right? Do have a super Easter, and we'll catch up with you after. Bye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.